Today's three readings, they all match. When we set up the readings, we just go through, of course, the synagogue order of the Torah portion and the half Torah, and then we go through the four Gospels and Acts cyclically. So when they all line up, it's really kind of fun, which they do today. First off, Moses is giving a bunch of laws, and we'll talk about those in just a minute. And one of the things, by the way, that Moses is talking about, or the laws talk about, are power relationships. So begins right immediately with slaves. How do you treat slaves? And that's sort of the ultimate power relationship. And we have other power relationship laws in there as well. So then we have the Jeremiah 34 reading, where it says, you people have been having power over your slaves, and you're not supposed to do it for more than 6 years. You haven't been releasing them like you're supposed to. So, you guys who are in power are about to see what it's like not to be in power, because I'm going to send a whole bunch of Babylonians, and they're going to take you into captivity, and you're not going to be in power at all. So, you're in power now, you're not doing it right, I will teach you a lesson the other way. So that's the Jeremiah passage. Those are both just set up by the synagogue. So then we have Yeshua. And what Yeshua is talking about is he is correcting their understanding of the law. So we have back at Moses all of these technical laws. Then we have in Jeremiah, you aren't following those laws. Then we have with Yeshua in today's reading, in Matthew 6, he's saying all these people are going around giving alms so that everybody can see them, fasting so everybody can see them, doing all of this stuff to demonstrate their righteousness. And what you don't understand is that isn't righteousness. Righteousness doesn't come from the law. And so what he's doing is bringing them back into line. And I will talk about each of those, but that's sort of the outline of what we're doing this morning. Lots of people read the statute section in Mishpatim. Why is that in there? And why is it there? But the whole point here is we've had the big picture. That's what we had last time with the Ten Commandments, where God comes down on the mountain and says, I'm God and you're not, and do you want to be my people? And they say, yes, we do. So then we come into these details. So the big picture was last week. And that's where God has entered into a covenant relationship with the people of Israel. Big picture. That tells you where you're going. The laws are what I would call the greasy details. And what the greasy details do is keep you from going off the path as you are pursuing the bigger goal. So we all understand that we have this covenant with God, we have a relationship with God, and ultimately we're going to be saved and so forth. But there's a whole lot of stuff in between that we have to go through. And what these details do is keep you on the path as you go through the process. Now, I haven't talked about this since 2014. There's an article by a guy named Robert Clover, who was dean of Yale Law School back in the 1980s. The title of it is Nomos and Narrative. Nomos is law, narrative is story. The point of laws are to set up the conditions where someone's story can be realized. The stories that we have are the basis for the laws we set up. So let's look at Israel. Israel has just come out of 400 years of slavery. They've been taken into the wilderness, where they have come into relationship with God. They have learned to trust God, not completely, as we'll see as they go along. They frequently stumble. But the part about slavery is they have been on the wrong side of the abuse of power. And by the way, power relationships among humans are inevitable. They're always going to happen. They aren't necessarily bad. And so what God is doing in this set of laws is saying, all right, you now know what it was like to be on the wrong side of power relationships. This is what you do to stay on the right side of power relationships. And all of this comes out of the stories that Israel told among themselves during captivity. The laws then are This is how we avoid going back into slavery. The other part of that is every law that gets written represents somebody's vision of how society should work. Otherwise, there's no point in making a law. So, for example, our communists in Denver have just made a law that says, thou shalt not use a plastic bag to carry thy groceries. Well, that represents a vision, okay? Now, I don't agree with that vision, but somebody has a vision of what a good society looks like, which is no plastic bags. So all laws are implementations of somebody's idea of what a society should look like. So what should the society look like that has the laws that were given by Moses at Sinai? What does this ideal society look like? Well, it portrays a relationship with God. And that relationship is based on three things. One is individual liberty. God makes his covenant with the entire nation, men, women, and children. We talked about that last week. He doesn't just get the prominent men in the society and come up and say, all right, let's do this covenant, guys. He has everybody stand at the foot of the mountain. He has everybody agree to it. And it's said today in the Torah portion, with one voice, all of the people said, what he said we'll do, we agree. So the whole idea here is it's a voluntary relationship that Israel enters into with God, free choice among free people. That's thing one. Thing two, personal responsibility. Listen to all the laws that Michael read. If you've got an animal that's dangerous, you're responsible to make sure that that animal doesn't injure anybody. And if it does, you're responsible for that. If somebody gets killed, you get killed because you didn't take responsibility for your animal. You dig a pit. You got a responsibility to put a fence around it or something to keep people from falling into your pit. So the laws are heavy into personal responsibility. And then the third one is the proper use of power. And that starts at the beginning when it talks about how do you deal with slaves, which is the ultimate power relationship. So three things that characterize the relationship between Israel and God: individual liberty, personal responsibility, and the proper use of power. The laws then are all designed to further that vision. Now, the thing about power relationships, let's start there. Israel has just been on the wrong side of a power relationship to the point where the Egyptian masters felt perfectly justified in taking their children and throwing them into the river. That's power run amok. We have a lot of power run amok in the world today where governments regard people as chattel. And we got too many of them, so we'll go ahead and kill a bunch of them. That's what happened during World War II. That's what happened when Stalin starved all the kulaks to death. Millions of people killed just because the government didn't think that they needed them. You've got people in the WEF in Switzerland, who are not dining on bugs, by the way, who have said, oh yeah, we've got far more people than we need in the world. Well, who's we? We have more people than we need. Who's we? It isn't you. So again, these are power relationships run amok. And the whole basis for God's view of power relationships is everybody is made in the image of God. You are all creatures of God. And for you to take one of God's creatures, which he made and for whom Christ died, and treat him like chattel is a violation of the covenant. That's what God is saying at Sinai. I have taken Israel in here as my people. We are in covenant. I made them. I have taken them in covenant. You will not treat them as chattel. And that's where the Jeremiah passage came in, where, oh, okay, we'll set them all free. And then 2 days later, they say, wait a minute, who's going to make the bed? Who's going to fry the pancakes? Whoa, wait a minute. Hey, you all come back. Because we need you to be slaves. And God said, you wouldn't set your people free, so I'm going to set the sword free. And that sword is going to come on you, and you're going to be on the wrong side of power relationships again. By the way, the context of Jeremiah, that's just before Babylon came and sanded the place off. So now let's go to the Sermon on the Mount, which is where we are in Matthew. We've had a whole bunch of very detailed statutes that got read today. There'll be a whole bunch more, by the way. What's happening in the Sermon on the Mount is you have the Pharisees who are looking for righteousness in all the wrong places. So they have memorized all of these rules. And they are going about and saying, we are doing every one of these rules. What Yeshua says to them is, yeah, you tithe mint and cumin and do all that stuff, which is right, you should do that, but you're neglecting the weightier matters of the law, which are power relationships. You're not treating people justly. So what Yeshua is doing in his Sermon on the Mount is he is correcting Israel's societal understanding of the Torah. So let's look at a couple of them. And I'm going to back up a week from where we read today. Matthew 5, 19. This is every Messianic's favorite passage. He didn't come to destroy the law. Whoever therefore relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called greatest in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. What he is saying is righteousness doesn't come from the law. Righteous people do follow the law, and it's really easy to get confused. Because if you're righteous and you follow the law, you can sort of think, well, I'm righteous because I follow the law. That's not right. Let me read from Psalm 24. Kay and I read this every Shabbat. Who shall ascend the hill of the Lord, and who shall stand in his holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false, and does not swear deceitfully. He will receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. Notice righteousness is something that is given to him, not something that he has. That's the essence of Christianity 101. Righteousness is not something that you earn by being good. You are simply a well-behaved corpse. Righteousness is something that is given to you because of a relationship you have to the one who you are in covenant with. The law does not grant righteousness. The law simply says, this is how you behave. And certainly a righteous person will follow the law. But don't be confused. This is in Matthew 5:21, read it last week. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder. Well, yes, it was. And whoever murders will be liable for judgment. But I say to you, here we go, that whoever is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment, whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says you idiot will be liable to hellfire. Now, what's he saying there? What he's saying there is the law says you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So if you simply refrain from murdering the miserable cuss, but you hate him, and you really want bad things to happen to him and so forth, you're not doing what the Torah says, even though technically you haven't done wrong because you haven't killed him. That's what he's saying. What he's doing is he's correcting cultural drift, because what the Pharisees are doing is being very scrupulous with what they tithe and how they behave and all that kind of stuff. Boy, they're following every one of these rules, just boom, 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 boom. And they're missing the point. And in fact, what we know is that 30 years later, they're going to be up to their hips in Roman, and they're going to be sent off into slavery themselves, just exactly as it happened after Jeremiah 34. The difference is power relationships. How do they treat each other? And what Yeshua is saying is, hey, it's in your heart. If you hate your brother in your heart, and by the way, that's forbidden too, then what's going to eventually come out is mistreatment of your brother, and somehow you're going to run afoul of things. Let's look at another one. Matthew 5:27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Black letter scripture, don't commit adultery. No problem. But what he's saying is, if you are running around lusting after other people's wives, at some point you are going to cross the line. And so what you've got to do is you've got to discipline your eyes and your desires so that you don't lust after other people's wives, because then the actual act of adultery will never even cross your mind. What he's saying here is not that it was wrong when Moses said it. There's more to it than that. And by the way, Paul says the letter kills and the spirit keeps alive. What we're talking about here is the spirit of the law. The Torah is a fairly small book. Compare the Torah to the statute book in Denver and all the volumes of statutes. It's very terse. It's very short. What it's doing is it's telling you these are some examples. Now, based on these examples, how should you live? And what Yeshua is saying is exactly that. All right, it says don't commit adultery. But wait a minute, there's more to it than that. Are you looking with lustful eyes on somebody else's wife? Or if you're married, on some other woman? And what it's saying is the spirit of this law is that you discipline your eyes. The letter of that law is don't commit adultery. Same thing with the one with murder. The letter of the law is don't murder. The spirit here is don't harbor ill will against your brother. And there are ways to deal with that. And then Matthew 6, which was today's reading, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. Now, there isn't anything wrong with walking according to the law, because that's the law. The problem is, if you are parading yourself as some sort of a moral paragon because you haven't murdered your brother, and you're saying, whoa, look at me, look at how great I am, I haven't murdered anybody today, then what you're doing is you're practicing a righteousness you do not have. Because remember from the psalm, we said the righteousness is a gift of God. The righteousness doesn't come from obeying the law. Obeying the law is something that righteous people do, not something that grants righteousness. Another one from Paul, same spirit. This is in 1 Corinthians. Do I say these things on human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox that treads out the grain. And it absolutely is written in the law of Moses. Is it for oxen that God is concerned? Does he not speak entirely for our sake? It is written for our sake, because the plowman should plow in hope and the thresher thresh in hope of sharing the crop. This is in the context of praying or preacher. What Paul is saying is, the muzzling the ox thing is an example. And you're supposed to take that example and you're supposed to then pass it on to everybody who serves you. The very short list of statutes doesn't cover every conceivable human situation. What you need to do is understand those statutes and say, I got a situation here. Which one of the statutes applies? And what Paul is saying is, you guys are saying that I'm unjustly profiting from you. Well, first off, I'm not. But if I were profiting from you, there's a passage in the Torah that covers that. You're supposed to not muzzle the ox while he's treading out the grain, which is to say, as someone is working for you and serving you, you should let him eat of the produce. That's the Torah principle, and Paul now pops it up and applies it to people, which is exactly correct. And that's exactly what Yeshua is doing in the Sermon on the Mount and in his teaching. He's going back and he's saying, all right, you guys say this, but I say that. Another example, the disciples walking through the field on Shabbat. They're hungry. So they reach out and grab some grain and do like this, and eating the green grain. And by the way, that is permitted in Torah. It is explicitly permitted in Torah. If somebody is walking by your field and picks one of your apples and eats it, that is perfectly permissible. What he's not allowed to do is bring a basket and harvest your tree. So the fact that Yeshua and his disciples are walking through a field and eating some of the grain, they're not stealing, it's perfectly permissible. But what they are doing is they are harvesting and threshing. So the Pharisees say, whoa, wait a minute, you're not supposed to do that on Shabbat. And Yeshua says, you guys don't get it. The law is not made to bind you. The law is made to free you. And the law is made to give you a society that is just and prosperous. By the way, hypocrite doesn't mean the same thing as it means to us today. A hypocrite to us today means someone who is dishonest, says one thing and does another. Hypocrite in biblical terms is an actor. Somebody who is playing a part doesn't necessarily imply the dishonesty that it does today. And that's what these Pharisees are doing. They're actors. They're walking through with their chests all popped up and saying, look at us, look at how righteous we are. They're acting. One last thing. Any of you know Andrew Klavan? Anyway, he's a Jew who has become a very, very strong Christian. And he's got a newsletter that I subscribe to. It's a conversation between him and his son. He will write a letter to his son will write a letter back the next day. It's very, very, very good. Remember I said early on that laws are based on narrative, which is to say, somebody, whenever you pass a law, has got a vision of what a society should look like. And in the case of Israel, their narrative was, we were former slaves, we were on the wrong side of power relationships, now we are free men and women, and now we are being taught how to use power, and we are coming into the presence of God. That's their story. So this is Andrew Klavan talking about memory. Memory is the core of identity. We are what we are because of how we hold within us what we have been. This is true not just of individuals, but of cultures too. That's what I'm just saying. They have this memory of Egyptian slavery, and that's coloring everything they're doing right now. So this is true not just of individuals, but of cultures too. Only by working toward a true understanding of our triumphs and traumas and traditions can we move forward as better selves. The iconoclasts, the radicals who pull down statues, thinking that they can break free from the sins of history, create not innocence, but ignorance. In attacking the traditions that shape them, they demolish the origins of their ideas, the very source of their righteous anger. They are condemned to close their cultural nakedness in secondhand barbarities. Destroy the past and you destroy the core of your being. So they're pulling down Confederate statues and renaming a whole bunch of army bases. I have no idea where the army bases are anymore because they've renamed them all because they were named after Confederates, which was on purpose, by the way, to help reunite the country. But in doing that, what's happened is they have not achieved a state of innocence, which is what they're trying to achieve. What they have done is they have destroyed their history and they have destroyed their stories, so they no longer know where they come from and they no longer have any idea why they have this righteous indignation, because they are now unmoored from the stories of their society. I thought that was a very good passage. Modern secularism is intent on destroying history. And one of the reasons we sit in here every week, those of you who are here every week, and listen to the words of Moses, is because Moses is in fact the foundation of our society. It's the foundation of Western society. One of the things that God says and Moses says to the children of Israel is, teach these things to your children. Tell them your stories. Tell them the stories of these people so that they become members of the nation of Israel who understand who they are and where they came from. And oh, by the way, Babylon is gone. Egypt is no longer a power. Greece is no longer a power. The Jews survive. And the reason they survive is because of the stories in the book. That's the thing that holds them together. Now, they go off the rails just like everybody else does. I'm not suggesting that they are somehow paragons of righteousness necessarily, but the point is they have an identity and a history. And so as you run into these fools who are trying to destroy our history, what they are trying to do is destroy our identity. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in our history that we're not proud of, but there's a bunch of stuff we are proud of. And getting rid of the stuff we're not proud of destroys the story.